This is Mayo Clinic Talks, a curated weekly podcast for physicians and healthcare providers. I'm your host, Andy Herber, a PA in hospital medicine at Mayo Clinic's Rochester campus. The complete blood count, or CBC, is one of the most commonly ordered laboratory tests. It is essential in helping providers diagnose, monitor, and screen for a wide array of diseases, conditions, and disorders. A keen understanding of the CBC and all its components is imperative to providing optimal care to patients. I'm really excited because today we're joined by Dr. Ronald Goh, a Mayo Clinic hematologist, professor of medicine, and highly decorated educator. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Goh.
Yeah, thank you, Andy.
All right, so when we're getting the CBC and the white blood cells come back, we've talked about hemoglobin, we've talked about platelets. I got to believe you get a lot of calls about high white blood cell count. Is there a few words that you have to say about that for those that are giving hematology a call for leukocytosis?
Yeah. So thank you. So I think that, you know, we get leukocytosis consult a lot, but the key thing to look into before you make a consult is determine which component of the white cell differential is high. And my suggestion here is we don't look at the percentage if you have it. You know, I think some places still report the percentage of neutrophil lymphocyte. Just look at the absolute, because the percentage doesn't really help you. If you have no neutrophil, you're going to have 100% lymphocyte, you know, and doesn't mean you have high lymphocyte count. So just look at the absolute count if you have leukocytosis and find out which type of white cell is really elevated. Is it neutrophilia, lymphocytosis, eosinophilia, monocytosis? Basophilia is very uncommon. And so that's the first thing I would do. If you have neutrophilia predominance, then most likely it's probably not a primary hematologic disorder. You know, neutrophilia, it's common in situations like inflammation, and anything that causes inflammation may give you neutrophilia. We talk about splenectomy or asplenia will give you neutrophilia. And certainly some medications, you know, growth factors can cause neutrophilia, but it's very unusual to have neutrophilia alone in the context of a blood cancer. So if you got neutrophilia alone, chances are that's not even a hematology problem. Don't forget about smoking, because smoking can cause neutrophilia and even lymphocytosis, mild. All right. Prednisone, of course, causes neutrophilia, dexamethasone, steroids. So that's neutrophilia. So the next thing to look at is lymphocytes. You know, let's say there's isolated lymphocytosis. Then you think about, is this infection, especially viral infection? Of course, it's always good to look at the prior CBCs. If this lymphocytosis has been around for 2 years, then it's not likely to be infection. Then you got to think more about chronic lymphocytic leukemia if the patient is not sick. If the patient has acute leukemia, you know, they would have pensat, you know, anemia, thrombocytopenia, and lymphocytosis. But more commonly in the outpatient will be chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And there's also an entity called monoclonal B-cell lymphocytosis, meaning the absolute lymphocyte count is less than 5,000, but it's above the normal, and it's not considered chronic leukemia because it does not meet the threshold of 5,000. So it's kind of like an MGUS to a myeloma, all right? So splenectomy, I mentioned, causes lymphocytosis also. Now, monocytosis too, you think about infection, you think about splenectomy, smoking can cause mild monocytosis, and chronic myelomonocytic leukemia can cause persistent chronic monocytosis. I want to mention too, you know, generally, I'm not concerned about monocytosis if it's not over 1.0 absolute, and if it's high above the normal, but it's not greater than 1.0, it's unlikely to be any hematologic condition. So eosinophilia is also interesting because we see this from time to time, but again, the usual suspects are reactive, not a primary hematologic condition. So medication is one you have to look into. You know, people, we think about allergic conditions, asthma, certainly we also have to think about parasitic infections, although, you know, I don't know, Andy, if you've seen any diagnosed any parasitic infections in the inpatient. You got to think about the context, you know, travels and so forth, where the patient is from. But certainly those are the top three. And the big question always is this a blood cancer? I would say it's very, very super rare. Let me put it that way. Super rare, you know, less than 1% of the eosinophilia is from a blood disorder or blood cancer. And similarly for eosinophilia, I wouldn't think about hematologic diseases primarily unless it's greater than 1.5. For monocytes, it's greater than 1.0. And then the last one is basophilia, which is the least common, the basophilia. If the absolute basophil count is high, and this will be more above 0.5 or so, you know, then you think about chronic myelogenous leukemia. That's one. We did a study 2 years ago and published this. We look at what are the common causes of these cytosis, leukocytosis. And, you know, we, to our surprise, you know, many patients who are smokers also may get mild basophilia. So smoking history is very important. It can cause basophilia, monocytosis, lymphocytosis, neutrophilia, but not eosinophilia. And in particular, if you have a combination of leukocytosis, high neutrophil, high lymphocyte at the same time, high neutrophil, high basophil at the same time, then you got to think about smoking. And I think finally, splenectomy can make most of these elevated except for the eosinophils. Yeah.
So we talked about elevated neutrophils, elevated lymphocytes. Again, I feel like we talk about this a lot. What number are you want to be called on for as far as like a white blood cell count elevation? Or is there even a number that you want to be called about?
The total white count itself is not as important. So I would think of it as, you know, what neutrophil count do I want to be called? Generally, for neutrophils, I think I have a higher bar here. And again, different hematologists may have different opinion. But to me, neutrophil count, don't call me unless it's over 20,000 or 30,000. It's really unusual to be a primary hematologic. For the lymphocyte count, certainly, you know, above 5,000 absolute, that may meet the criteria for chronic lymphocytic leukemia. The first thing that our providers can do is to get a flow cytometry to look for clonal B cells. By the way, that will be generally the only type of leukocytosis when flow cytometry is helpful. So don't get a flow cytometry for neutrophilia, for monocytosis, eosinophilia, or basophilia, just lymphocytosis. Of course, always repeat the CBC just to make sure it's true. For monocytosis, if it's persistently above 1.0, give us a call. For eosinophilia, if it's above 1.5 on several measurements and it's idiopathic, give us a call. For basophilia, about 0.5, certainly, if it's persistent, give us a call or send the patient to us. And I would say before you do that, you know, you repeat the CBC, but also get a blood smear. Because if this were a primary bone marrow pathology, there may be some either dysplastic or abnormal changes or shapes of the white cells that may be visible in a blood smear.
So the literature or the books always would call out like hyperviscosity syndrome. Can you just touch on that a little bit and to be worried about that?
So the hyperviscosity means that you got a thick blood, and that could be perhaps from at least two reasons. One is too much blood cells. The other one is maybe too much immunoglobulin. You know, the plasma is very thick and viscous. That's a separate condition, you know. So the plasma, if you think about it, if you have too high of a monoclonal IgM protein, we typically think of Waldenstrom macroglobulinemia. You can have hyperviscosity syndrome, even with a normal white count. And then for this purpose today, for this discussion, is leukocytosis. When do you get hyperviscosity syndrome, meaning you get end organ damage from hypoxemia and leukostasis? So generally, that actually doesn't occur unless you have acute leukemia. So we're talking about blasts, total white count over 100,000 with predominantly blasts. So 100,000 is generally what I look for. can somebody with more than 50,000 white cells and mostly blasts get leukostasis? Yes. But again, that would be very obvious. These are blast cells. Now, for the mature white cells, neutrophils, monocytes, I don't see eosinophils. You know, eosinophils don't get that high, but neutrophils, monocytes, and the mature white blood cells, like in chronic myelogenous leukemia, even if they go, the total white count, even if it goes above 100,000, it's very unusual. Or even CLL, you know, I would say it's unlikely that they get hyperviscosity or leukostasis, even if it's 200,000, if it's mature cells. It's the immature cells that are sticky. Yeah.
And as we're, you know, talking about blasts just real quick, I feel like personally every now and then I'll grab a CBC and there'll be one blast or three blasts or something. And I always feel bad ignoring that. But I got to believe you guys get called every time someone sees a blast. Is there a number of blasts where we should be calling you and where we should feel like it's just a fatigued marrow or a marrow that's going through, you know, trying to manage an infection or something like that?
Certainly, if there is a high number of blasts, let's say it's more than 5% in the differential, we should know about it sooner rather than later. But if it's like in the blood smear, rare blast, 1%, I would repeat the CBC. You know, the problem is sometimes the non-leukemic, non-malignant, immature white cells may look alike. Early precursors or even blasts sometimes may come out of the bone marrow, and it doesn't mean it's a cancer. As you mentioned, it could be a stress marrow. So typically people who are hemorrhaging, sometimes people who have overwhelming infection, they're pushing everything out of the marrow, including early blasts that are not clonal or not mutated, not leukemic, not cancerous blasts. Yeah, so if it's, you know, over 5% blast, yes, but if it's one or two blasts and the person is so sick with an infection, sepsis, I would just check it again in a few days. I wouldn't necessarily call hematology. The one thing though, Andy, is I have to say, if the blasts have hour rods, that's a different story. So even if you see one, and then there's this red rods inside the white cells, and they call it hour rods, I mean, you get a phone call from pathology directly, but if you have hour rods, then 1 hour rod is too much.
Yep. There's a lot of people that listen to this that are probably managing post-chemotherapy patients and so are exposed to patients that are getting GCSF. Can you just remind us, I mean, if the patient gets a dose of GCSF before they leave the hospital, is it the next day their white count should go up or is it a couple days? And then how high does it typically go?
Yeah, so I guess that's a great question. I think the answer is it varies. And so it can go up immediately the next day. It typically probably go up after 4 or 5 days with a peak about 10 days or so. Within 2 weeks, it will peak. And it varies on the situation. For somebody with the healthy marrow, like, okay, they get their CBC is normal, and then they get a dose of chemotherapy, CHOP or CHOP. And you give the GCSF, you know, you would expect your white count to go up to even 20. But for somebody with, say, bone marrow aplasia, hypocellular marrow, and for some reason needed a GCSF, that may take a while to go up and probably won't go up very far because the marrow itself is bad to begin with. As far as the peak, generally, I would say between 10 and 20 would be the peak. Rarely we would see 30, 40,000. Certainly, if you don't have a spleen, you know, your white count may be higher because there's no place for them to hide.
Okay. All right. So we talked about leukocytosis. We should probably cover leukopenia for a few minutes. So for the outpatient providers who draw a CBC and all of a sudden are faced with some leukopenia, what advice would you give them?
Yeah. So thank you for that question. Again, you know, the CBC has to be looked at in the context, you know, is it isolated leukopenia or not? Okay, let's just assume it's isolated leukopenia. Again, it's important not just to look at the total white count. We got to know which white cell line is depressed or reduced. Is it neutropenia, lymphopenia, eosinopenia, monocytopenia? I've never seen basopenia. I don't even know if there's such a word, but low basophil, okay? What I would say here is, in general, I'll throw out the easy ones. Lymphopenia in general is not a hematologic condition. I would say don't consult hematology for low lymphocyte count. The most common causes are steroids. You know, certainly people who get rituximab, you know, depletes the B cells. Other immunosuppressive drug, azathioprine, cyclosporine, it typically induce iatrogenic, the lymphopenia. And if the lymphopenia is not iatrogenic, there's no drugs, no infection, not due to a recent infection, and especially if it's chronic, then actually we should refer lymphopenia to immunology because they can have immunodeficiency syndromes, some congenital hereditary immunodeficiency syndrome associated with low immunoglobulin and no B cells. Assuming you have ruled out, you know, the acquired ones, you know, obviously patients with HIV will have low T cells, then that's going to be, you're going to have lymphopenia. But in general, I can't really think of any primary hematologic disease with absent or low lymphocyte count. So I would say if you got lymphopenia, I don't think referring to hematology is going to be helpful. That's the easy one. Eosinopenia, which you really rarely see, it's usually in the context, again, of steroids. They're very steroid sensitive. So low eosinophil, I don't know what to do if you send it to me. I'll just say, I don't know. And I'm talking about isolated low eosinophil. You know, if there's anemia, then we'll have to evaluate, you know, the case. Low basophil, I just don't see that. And then the next question here is monocyte, low monocyte. You know, there are rare hematologic conditions that can present with low monocyte count. You know, one of them is called GATA2 deficiency syndrome, wherein they get recurrent infection and get cutaneous warts, and it's due to a mutation that causes low neutropenia and monocyte. And usually it's a combination, but may start with monocytopenia. So low monocyte count, I think that's a fair referral to hematology. I have to admit that's really uncommon. The other one I can think of monocytopenia is hairy cell leukemia. And these are patients who would present with pancytopenia. So the bone marrow is full of scar tissue, hairy cells. They have big spleen and the monocytes are actually depleted. But again, it's not isolated monocytopenia. And I would say the most appropriate consult to him would be neutropenia. And that's more common than the other cytopenias. So neutropenia, you know, it's good to call heme. But generally, I would say repeat the test. If the ANC is below 1.5, call heme. If it's above 1.5, even if it's below your institutional reference range, I don't think it's going to be helpful to call heme because I'll say, I don't know what's the cause. It's not bad enough for me to do a bone marrow or do other tests. And if the person is not sick, I'm not sure what to do with it. But what less than 1.5, that's our neutropenia in hematology. Now, having said that, you know, let's say your ANC is below 1.5. So the usual suspect is the first thing you think about, is this a new thing? Or does the person have 1.4 all his or her life? And this is important because there's this condition called benign ethnic neutropenia, BEN, constitutional neutropenia. And nowadays, I think that the better term is called DAPI, antigen associated neutrophil count, BANC. You know, they don't want to use the word neutropenia because when you say neutropenia, it implies that you're not normal. But there is a group of people, especially Black people who are from the Middle East and maybe a certain Jewish population, they have no DAPI antigen. DAPI is one of these red cell white cell antigen. We don't type them. It's like ABORH. But if Duffy is negative, generally their ANC is low, you know, could be as low as 0.6 or 0.5. And that's their normal. And historically, I think it has protection against malaria. And that's why it's kind of a good polymorphism not to have the Duffy antigen. But that's the first thing, you know, you want to make sure this is not constitutional. And I think the best test to do is to do the Duffy antigen typing. Just type Duffy. It's a type of blood typing, and you'll see double negative Duffy. And that actually may explain your neutropenia, especially if this person is not ill all the time, don't get any fevers or infections. Just healthy person, with neutropenia and it's chronic. So once that's out of the equation here, then, you know, you got to think about acquired neutropenia. And the most common causes are, you know, medication. Now, there's a long list of medications. You know, the usual suspects would be myelosuppressive meds, the ones that we use in hematology, hydroxyurea, obviously chemotherapy. And some patients obviously may have idiosyncratic reaction to drugs and they get ANC of zero when they're not supposed to, unexpected alopecia and all that. I mean, it's rare. Those are rare. And so drugs, we said infection most of the time causes neutrophilia, not neutropenia, but we can see that especially with overwhelming infection, sepsis and so forth. And then you have to think about, is it antibody mediated destruction? So people with autoimmune disorder, lupus, Felty syndrome, rheumatoid arthritis, think about that. Now, the nutritional is important too, nutritional neutropenia. Now, nutritional, though, I have to say, in my experience, is generally not isolated neutropenia. So let's say B12 deficiency. It can cause pancytopenia. It can cause anemia, but not isolated neutropenia. So B12 deficiency should not cause isolated neutropenia. Folate deficiency should not cause isolated neutropenia. So I rarely check them if it's isolated neutropenia. But if you have anemia plus neutropenia, yes, they get those. Copper deficiency is very uncommon, but it can cause neutropenia, again, generally with other cytopenias. And then the last one we have to think about is cancers. All right. So cancers, I got to say that will be the last thing, because that would mean you have to do a bone marrow biopsy. So the cancers, I have to say, it's actually uncommon to present as isolated neutropenia, whether it's acute leukemia, myelodysplastic syndrome, myeloma, or lymphoma. Now, MDS, there may be, you know, I don't know the exact figure or number, maybe 5% may present with isolated neutropenia, or 5 to 10%, perhaps more common than isolated thrombocytopenia. The other cancers, you know, lymphoma, myeloma, acute leukemia, generally do not present with isolated thrombocytopenia.
Okay. And then I remember learning, like, you know, there's severe neutropenia, moderate neutropenia, and then severe neutropenia. So to get to be severe neutropenia, I believe, is less than 500. Those are medical emergency. Those are typically your chemo patients, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we generally classify severity of leukemia by these numbers, you know, between 1 and 1.5 or 1,000 to 1,500 is mild, 500 or 0.5 to 1.0 or 1,000, that's moderate. And then less than 0.5 or less than 500 is severe. So in general, if your ANC is over 500 or over 0.5, we really don't expect you to have more infection than the average person. People may get infected because they got chemotherapy, they're on steroids, but the ANC alone, 0.5 is generally pretty safe. Even people with chronic neutropenia, but ANC above 0.5, I would say it's generally they don't really get more infections. But less than 0.5, yes, that would be a medical emergency. But if you see someone with ANC of less than 0.5 as an outpatient and is healthy or is not, doesn't have a fever, yeah, I mean, you don't have to send the patient to him same day or the next day. Don't wait 6 months, but, you know, it's the fever plus the low ANC, then it's an emergency.
Are there drugs out there that can cause neutropenia?
I'll flip the question. You know, if you ask me in the last year, how many, I've seen a lot of neutropenias, but in the last year, how many neutropenia I can blame it to a drug? I would say maybe just one. Somebody, I think it was on temozolomide, have severe neutropenia. A very common consult we get is like, say, from rheumatology. Somebody's on low-dose methotrexate. That generally should not cause neutropenia. Weekly low-dose methotrexate, they should not even cause anemia. You know, the other immunosuppressive agents, azathioprine, cyclosporin, they may cause mild neutropenia, ANC above 1.0 or above 0.5, but not severe neutropenia. Seizure medications, of course, you know, carbamazepine, valproic acid, and the newer, perhaps the newer anticonvulsants, should be considered, but you got to look at the timing too. If the neutropenia was there before the drug or after the drug. Yeah, again, I think looking at historical data is important. The chronicity of the cytopenia versus an acute, and also is the patient ill or sick or not? And then again, the medications. I mean, COVID causes a lot of these cytopenias. Generally, it's transient or temporary.
People that are managing like the effects of chemo, if they're calling you guys for anything a lot that I could ask you that you could answer. A lot of our listeners are probably managing post-chemotherapy patients, maybe are checking a CBC and patient's healthy, but oh, by the way, their neutrophil count is 250. Yeah. Do they need to call you? Can they repeat the test? Can the patient stay at home? What's your recommendations?
Yeah, so I think in general, if somebody's on myelosuppressive chemotherapy, meaning chemo that can cause low neutrophil count, unless there's fever, you know, because it's expected anyway, unless there's a fever, I wouldn't worry about it all of the time, I should say. There got to be a hematologist taking care of this patient if chemo is already given. So just call the hematologist if you have questions. The bigger question is, you probably don't need to get a CBC for this patient. The time that I get a CBC for the regular chemo is on the day of their chemo. If it's a chemo every 3 weeks, I only get the CBC every 3 weeks because it helps me decide if I'm going to continue with the chemo. Should I cut the dose? Should I increase the dose? Should I give the chemo? But in between, I don't need to know the ANC is zero for 5 days. It doesn't help me. I mean, as long as they recover before their next chemo, I don't need to know what's in between. Because if you get it and it's 0.2, then you get a problem. You know, you got to call someone because it's low. You get called by the labs too. The patient gets excited. So I think that's the first question. In somebody who's getting chemo, I would say if you get CBC, you're going to get a low count. So try not to do the CBC unless you have to. And usually it's the first day of chemo. It's a prevention, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
I would say in general, we don't really need to do a CBC every day for any kind of admission. You know, I'm a hematologist, and I can tell you, even in the patients who are in hematology service, they don't need a daily CBC. I think we can obviously save on resources and save on poking the patient and certainly reduce the hospital bills by not doing a daily CBC. Even if this is a heme service, you know, there's not many situations where you really need a daily platelet counting. And let's say you got TTP, yeah, yes, you do. But for somebody who's getting chemo, even every other day CBC may be enough, you know, especially if you've given the blood transfusion or platelet transfusion today and you get one tomorrow, of course, the hemoglobin is going to go up. It's expected. You know, you can wait probably another day.
We've been talking about everything white blood cell related with Dr. Ronald Goh. Thanks for your time, Dr. Goh. If you have enjoyed Mayo Clinic Talks podcast, please follow us for weekly content.